Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit Kane5.com.
Listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Wides, your host. Did you ever schlep around Europe with a backpack, like when you were a poor student? You know, that classic student-y thing of going off for a summer with your bag all packed to sleep in youth hostels and look at old churches and drink beer in pubs and grappa in bars with giant Scandinavian boys and endless hordes of traveling Germans and Australians. Did you do that? Do kids still do that? Do kids still go to Europe now, or is it too expensive? Maybe they all go to Southeast Asia now. I think maybe like Cambodia is the new France. I don't know. Maybe they go to Vietnam or Cambodia or Guatemala or, I don't know, Argentina. I don't know where college kids go anymore these days. But Europe was such a bargain when I was in college in the 80s. You could do it. And people used to say, oh, it's not like it was back in the 60s and the 70s. It was cheap. But it was still pretty affordable. The almighty dollar still was. And it was manageable, even for me. And I got through college on $40 a week. So it's hard to believe there was a time when the dollar was so strong that I could go to London to visit my friend Newt, and the exchange rate was £2 to the dollar. Yeah, not the other way around, the way it is now. £2 to the dollar. So you doubled your money. Basically, whatever the price on the tag was, you were paying half. So I did a little shopping, needless to say. So if you did do that, if you did schlep through Europe one summer with a minimal budget and a backpack, all eager and wide-eyed, what did you eat the most of when you were there? Come on. We all did it. It was the easiest and most portable food around. It was bread and cheese, right? You were in the capitals of bread and cheese. Or at least in what was then called Western Europe. When I went, the countries that you would go to because there was food there. Good bread and good cheese, or any food at all in Western Europe. Because good bread and cheese could just sustain you all day, and it would allow you to save your money for drinking grappa with giant Swedes at night. Now, it was another story in the East. Eastern Europe was still this kind of vast, brooding, looming, scary, unknown place, and I didn't actually venture east until 1990, which was right after the Berlin Wall came down. But even then, you'd go into a restaurant and sit down, and they would ignore you for about a half an hour, and then they'd come over and silently hand you a menu and walk away again, and then come back in a little while and stand silently and sullenly by your table. And so you'd order something off the menu, and then they would tell you they didn't have that. And so you'd order something else, and they would say, oh, we don't have that. And finally, you would just shrug, and they would just shrug. And then either you left because they didn't actually have any food, or they brought you a plate of what kind of looked and tasted like boiled squirrel and potatoes. That was Eastern Europe. But in Western Europe, in France and Germany and the Benelux countries and Italy and all those great places that you would hit on your student tour circuit, there was great food all around you, of course. But if you were doing it on the super cheap and you wanted to keep moving and keep mobile, it was bread and cheese wrapped up in paper and shoved into your backpack right on top of your worn out copy of Let's Go Europe or Lonely Planet. Right in there with your address book and your notebook and your pens and your various stamps and your postcards, because this was before the internet, and I don't even know how we functioned or managed to get anywhere, but somehow we did. And the bread and cheese went with you on the trains and on the ferries and on the buses, and that was good because if you arrived somewhere in Southern Europe where the culture is Mediterranean, and if you got there anywhere between noon and 4 o'clock on a given day, you would arrive in a town that was completely shut down. because everybody still shut everything down. And if you were hungry, you were SOL, my friend. So it's a good thing that you had shoved that hunk of bread and cheese into your bag the night before when you left Austria on the overnight train, where you had to stand in a car full of smoking Germans. That happened to me. Now, bread and cheese is like the most basic marriage of foods. It's the most basic, pure, the staff of life paired with milk's leap toward immortality, because that's what cheese is, married together in a perfect portable form. One of the oldest prepared foods around, probably. I mean, at least in Europe. Bread, cheese, just that. People have been eating that longer than they've been eating just about anything else. You could survive on bread and cheese for a really, really long time if you had to. It's protein, fat, and carbs. Eventually, yeah, you might need a fruit or some vegetables, but you won't die right away. It would take years, and it would certainly get you through an entire summer before you, you know, headed back to SUNY Buffalo for your senior year. Now, even I, of the orthorexia, super picky, I can't eat anything anymore fame, even I eat bread and cheese still sometimes. If I have, you know, really good bread, like stone ground, organic, naturally fermented whole wheat sourdough, I'll eat that with good cheese, like grass-fed, preferably raw milk, sheep or goat's milk cheese. But that's actually not true, because I also eat mass-produced cheese, too. I'm okay with it. I shop at Costco. I'm thrifty. But Costco sells Cabot cheddar and Petit Basque and goat cheese logs, so it's okay. I eat all of that. I'm not ashamed. I'm just thrifty. I balance it out. Now, sometimes for dinner at my house, we'll just have what we call cheesy toast for dinner. Cheesy toast and like with a salad and maybe some pickles. Because I still kind of live like I'm a backpacking student, really. I still kind of maintain that same budget. And cheesy toast, if you can't figure it out, is just that. It's bread and cheese plus toasting. Because the only thing that makes bread and cheese better than bread and cheese is bread and cheese with heat. Apply heat to the cheese, or toast the whole thing in a hot oven or over a fire, or even more elaborate, griddle the whole thing with some fat on the outer surfaces, and you have transformed the humble bread and cheese, the B&C, into something else altogether, the grilled cheese. Misnamed, of course, because it's griddled, not grilled. The griddled cheese, takes the bread and cheese to new heights. It transforms it into something else. Something cohesive and unified. It's something totally different from the bread and cheese. It's like a raw vegetable and a cooked vegetable. All good, just different. But you can't put the grilled cheese in your backpack because it would ooze oil all over your map of Florence and your spare Walkman batteries. So you had to stick with the bread and cheese when you were traveling. We're going to take a very short break. And when we get back, more about this.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food with me, Erica Weitz, here on Heritage Radio Network. Now, where the simple combination, that simple, pure, almost peasanty working man combination of bread and cheese says Europe to me, although other countries, of course, other countries, because Europe is a country, says Europe. The grilled cheese, to me, sings the Star Spangled Banner. Although, of course, it's all European in origin, bread and cheese and all that, the croque monsieur and that ilk. But to me, the grilled cheese is one of our own, albeit made crappy with terrible bread and processed cheese foods. In our own inimitable American way, we took the most pure, simple combination of ancient foods, one of the earliest foods made by man, bread and cheese, and we ran it through the foodiness processing machines, and out came the American grilled cheese sandwich, or actually the grilled American cheese sandwich, really. And isn't it sad that one of our only foods that is actually named American, that has the word American in its title, is processed pasteurized cheese food product, which is what American cheese is. So fake and so full of foodiness foolery that it can't even legally be called cheese because it's not, because it's processed. Now, many years ago when I worked in restaurant kitchens, I heard the chef that I worked for talking to the founder of the American Cheese Society, which at the time was like five people from New York restaurants who would get together and eat cheese and talk about it, and now is like a really big deal, and it's a thing, the American Cheese Society. And they got together and did that because they loved cheese and they wanted to promote American cheesemakers, not American cheese makers. You get the difference there? Unfortunately, it sounded like they were the American Cheese Society, not the American Cheese Society. But that's changed, since now there are many hundreds of American cheese makers in the U.S., not American cheese makers. And that's good. But the crappy cheese in grilled cheese still stands supreme. It's the paradigm, the symbol. It's the definition of grilled cheese is to make it with the crappy Kraft single, the bad American cheese. And sure, there are plenty of great grilled cheese sandwiches made with good cheese. I ate one of the most delicious grilled cheeses I ever had at the new Whole Foods in Brooklyn over the winter. Granted, I had a hangover, which makes everything taste better, but it was still kick-ass. So why does American cheese still even exist? It's not even cheese. Kraft singles, slices, whatever they call it, not technically cheese. That's gross. Now, I ate a ton of it, of course, growing up. We all did. We all ate American cheese, the slices, but I would only eat the yellow kind because I was convinced that the white tasted different. I wouldn't eat the white. And I ate my grilled yellow American cheese on white bread with my Campbell's tomato soup and watched The Magic Garden many an afternoon after school. And I'm not really sure why I was allowed to eat all that crap, as we generally ate fairly good quality, not processed food in our house, but there was some element of defeat in my mother that gave in, that acquiesced to the American cheese and the crappy bread and the canned soup. I'm not really sure why. Postpartum depression, 7 years later. Now, it's totally and typically indicative of America today, of course, that you can go to a Whole Foods or a Fairway or a Trader Joe's even, or even a better supermarket, and there is like an array of 200 cheeses to choose from them, to choose from a good percentage of them domestically produced, like good cheese, like real cheese made here in the U.S., lots and lots of them, and you have access to them pretty much everywhere. And yet, cheese, in quotes, or actually maybe spelled with a Z, so imagine me now saying cheese with a Z, picture that, is completely something else. Cheese omelets, cheeseburgers, grilled cheese, mac and cheese, cheese puffs, all topped or made with or flavored with the product that refers to a generic yellow, orangey, vaguely cheddar-like processed product, the peel-off single, the plastic-wrapped slice, the spray cheese. I won't even discuss Velveeta because I don't even really know what that is. And we never ate that in our house because that was just way too goyish, like Spam. Never eaten Spam. So there's cheese with an S and there's cheese with a Z. Real cheese, processed cheese products. Does anyone actually think that the processed stuff is real cheese? Well, probably, because they still sell a shit ton of it, and it's relatively cheap, and, you know, not everybody's so enlightened and liberal elite like we are, and not everyone can spend $22.50 a pound for artisan cheddar cheese, including me these days, because consulting, you know, it's not paying that well these days. But there is a happy in-between. It's called mass-produced. Now, it's still actually really cheese, and the ingredients say milk, rennet, and salt. That's cheese, and I'm okay with that. That's that stuff that I buy at Costco, and it's okay. Now, Kraft, sensing a paradigm shift, smelling change in the air, like all the big processed food companies who are now getting scared and are doing little token things to make us think they're paying attention or think that they have their best interests. No, our best interests in mind. Think they do. Kraft recently made a really big effing deal about how they're removing the artificial flavors and preservatives from their processed cheese food product singles. They even have this brand new beautiful website that's called like knowyoursingles.com or something like that, or know your something. Yeah, or your singles, or mycraftsingles.com. I forgot. I just looked at it 2 hours ago.
Knowyoursingles.com.
Oh, thank you, Jack. It's nice, right? It looks like a real like food website.
It does.
I know, it's scary. So it's beautiful and it has rustic looking food just oozing with melty cheese with a Z. And it's not like trashy like trailer park shit food. It's like nice food, like what, you know, people like us would make. And they even have a recipe on there for a kale and cheese omelet. Because people who eat processed Singles cheese products are also eating kale. Well, at least they're getting the message to eat the kale. And at least Kraft is getting the message that people don't want their chemicals and their artificial shit anymore. But then if you don't want that stuff, if the people have spoken and said, take the chemicals out of the cheese product, why are the people still demanding the processed cheese product in the first place? If they've had it without, or with the count, sorry, what am I saying? If they've had it, had to make it with the chemicals all these years, do you trust them any more now that they've taken it out? It's still processed cheesy with a Z shit. It's still foodiness. And in fact, a kale and Kraft single omelet may qualify for the first Golden Uncrustable Recipe Award this year. We'll put it on the short list of nominees. And when we get around to doing the Golden Uncrustable Awards, it'll go on the Recipe Awards list this year. It's just like when Cheerios announced a few months ago that they'd be removing the GMOs from their plain flavored Cheerios, Cheerios Original. But Cheerios are made from oats, which have never been GMO. So all they did was swap out one type of sugar for another. It's like bait and switch marketing. Like, hey, look at us over here. Look at what we're doing. We're doing a really great thing. No, look, look, over here, over here, over here. Except it's really a teeny tiny token thing that they do to make themselves look really good to the masses who are still buying the products without really thinking about what else they're consuming or the greater implications of what they're consuming. So Kraft Singles is doing the same thing. They're swapping out sorbic acid for natamycin. So they took a chemical preservative out for basically an antibiotic to keep the mold from growing. We are very, very so impressed and thankful to you, Kraft, for doing that BFD, as we used to say, while gazing up at Notre Dame. Let's go get some cheese and find some giant Swedes to have a drink with. We're going to take another little break, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Weitz. Now, remember that you can follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also check out my new Huffington Post blog. Yeah, Huffington Post blogger right here. What else can I tell you? Follow Let's Get Real on Facebook, and also you can always, ever, and forever listen to every Heritage Radio Network show ever on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes. You can also pay my site a visit, letsgetrealshow.com. And also remember, Heritage Radio is member supported. So you know what that means. Click that button. Send us a check. Now, remember last week's show about popcorn? Of course you do. Now, when I was researching last week's show about popcorn, and I was looking up popcorn-esque snacks, that's S-N-A-X, snacks for the show last week, I came upon something even more atrociously abhorrent than the processed cheese with a Z single slice. Now, you guys know how I love to talk about flavorings, right? And how we've distilled certain flavors down to these universally accepted chemical profiles to add to other foods. Like everybody got together and said, this is what strawberry tastes like, or this is what birthday flavor tastes like, or red velvet flavor. One-dimensional, groupthink, consensus-agreed-upon flavors that are added to other stuff to make that stuff flavor like the original stuff. Yeah, you know, I love this stuff. So cheese with a Z flavor has been around for a really long time. I mean, we all grew up with cheese with a Z flavor because, aka, the original cheese with a Z product, the cheese doodle. Yes, the cheese doodle, which tastes just like processed cheese food or cheese whiz in a can or the singles or the Velveeta or any of that other stuff. It's all this kind of universally agreed on mild cheddar flavor, the cheese doodle. Now, when I was an overweight young child, I once ate about 300 cheese doodles at a Girl Scout meeting because we never, ever ate them at home. And when I saw them, I had a crack addict-like response to them, and I couldn't stop until I had to eat the entire bowl of them. I ate more cheese doodles that night than I think anyone should legally be allowed to eat. But when I came home after the Girl Scout meeting, I had to report to my mother about what I ate at the meeting, which was humiliating and embarrassing because she would then write it all down in a little journal, which we would then take to my doctor and show him every month to show him how hard I was trying to lose weight, which of course didn't work and backfired and just made me want to eat more and more and more cheese doodles whenever I could get the chance. So I came home and my mother said, okay, what'd you have for snack at the meeting? And I said, cheese doodles. And she said, how many did you eat? And I said, maybe 10, 12, plus 300. So in my research for this week's show, I found a company called Snickity. I don't know how you pronounce it. Snickity, Snickity, S-N-I-K-I-D-D-Y. Snickity? Now, Snickity makes a line of foodiness snack foods because, of course, with a name like that, what else could they make? And their tagline, it just kills me. The tagline on the package says, have a healthy day. You have a healthy day. And the packages are really pretty and they're like hand-drawn and it all has this very kind of like homespun, Hamish-y looking thing going on. Now, Snickity snacks are just corn puffs. Like so many other corn puff snacks around now, everything is a corn puff snack. But these have cheddar powder coating them. So they are in the school of snacks that I think I may start calling the no snacks. Because they're in that school of snacks that's all about trumpeting what they don't have. They kind of tout and trumpet and blast everything they don't have to kind of drive your attention away from what they actually are. So they don't have gluten. Oh, well, that's great. Oh, they're gluten-free. They're good for me then. Gluten's bad. There's no gluten in those. No corn syrup. Oh, corn syrup. That's the devil. Good. There's no wheat. Good, because I'm avoiding wheat. Wheat does all kinds of terrible things to me. No hydrogenated oils. Well, of course, they're about to become illegal. No trans fats. Same thing. No preservatives. Well, you know what? A lot of companies don't use preservatives anymore. And low saturated fat. Well, that's good, except there's no evidence that saturated fat is harmful for us anyway. So they have none of any of those things. So what's in them? Nothing. Air? Water? I don't know what's left. They have to do that to disguise the fact of what they really are, which is what? What do they have in those pretty bags with the hand-drawn pictures of cheese and leaves and haystacks and farmers? Well, what do we have the most of here in the United States? Corn. They're made of corn, processed, ground, non-whole grain corn, just like those popcorner things I talked about last week, those popcorn chips that aren't really made out of popcorn. They're made out of corn. There's a difference. Popcorn is a whole grain. You add some oil and some heat to it, it pops. These puffy things are made out of processed, industrially grown corn slurry. So these things are made out of that same slurry, corn slurry. Oh, and some rice flour, too. And then some powdered cheddar-flavored cheese dust and some salt and some sugar and some oil. Oh, that's all that's in them. Clean labeling, that's what it's called. Now, in fact, vegetable oil is the second ingredient after the corn and the rice flours and before the cheese. So they're just cheese puffs like Pirate's Booty or just corn puffs with spinach dust. But the oil is most likely corn oil, as that's the cheapest and most widely used oil in food processing. And so they're made of corn and corn oil. Oh, and then cheddar powder, which comes from milk from corn-fed cattle. Oh, and then maltodextrin, which is a sugar made from corn, and salt. So your basic puff snack food substrate from corn slurry with cheddar dust added to it. Okay, so that's what it is. But what makes these extra insidious to me, Snickity, is not that they're just cheesy puffs. It's the flavors that they're selling. oy, the flavors, because Snickety come in grilled cheese flavor and mac and cheese flavor. So now we've distilled the essence of grilled cheese and mac and cheese, two recipes, two legitimate food preparations that have infinite possibilities and combinations. We've distilled grilled cheese down into a single flavor profile for a puffed corn snack, or mac and cheese into a single puffed corn snack. How can you do that? Grilled cheese isn't a single flavor. Grilled cheese could be made of 60,000 different combinations of bread and cheese. Mac and cheese, same thing. You can use any kind of cheese. You can mix it up. But we seem to have these ideas about what these flavors are, and we narrow them down and we make them into this little test tube, and that's that. Now, the amount of corn eaten in the U.S. is insane. We all know that, right? I don't have to go into this, do I? We all know that we eat a completely corn-based diet in more ways than we could ever even fathom. It's not just the corn syrup and the sweeteners, but it's the corn-fed animals that give us our meat and our milk and the corn-based snack foods and the cereals and the eggs that come from the chickens that are fed corn, and then we eat the chickens too, and it's just corn, 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 corn. It never ends. You all know that, right? Even our gasoline is cut with ethanol made from corn. I know you know this. If you've been listening to this station for 3 days, you know this. It comes up all the time. Now, too much corn in our diets is not a good thing. And I'm not talking about delicious summer sweet corn. And I'm not talking about popcorn. I'm talking about industrial processed corn, field corn. Corn is full of omega-3s. Omega-3s are a fatty acid. Whereas other foods, other plant foods, like green plant foods and nuts, are full of omega-3s. Oh my God, did I say threes? Omega-6s. Corn is full of omega-6s. I hope I didn't say threes. Whereas the other ones are full of omega-3s. You hear about omega-3s all the time because Foodiness Inc. adds them to all sorts of places where they don't belong, like peanut butter and orange juice and cookies, and they don't belong in there. You get omega-3s from green vegetables, nuts, and fish, and grass-fed dairy and grass-fed meat. Omega-6s you get from seeds and corn, sunflower seeds, corn. Now, humans need both, but we need them in a very high ratio of threes to sixes. Very high ratio. I forgot what it is, 20 to 1, something like that. But the average American diet is skewed the opposite way. We eat way, way, way more sixes to threes. And sixes are inflammatory. Sixes are what could well be the cause of all the heart disease and cancer and diabetes and all that stuff that's starting to explode in the population when we began to overproduce corn and shove it into our diets wherever we could. Or not we could, them, they, the government and the food industry, Foodiness Inc. Now, you've all read Michael Pollan. You know all about this. Hopefully you watched the movie King Corn. Do I have to get into it? No, you know this already. We can't escape the corn. So why then would we be feeding our children and ourselves corn puff snacks with an X? I don't know. I don't do it. So it's that overproduction of corn that's brought us to this place in America where we eat grilled cheese flavored corn puffs. Grilled cheese foodiness wolves in sheep's clothing, taglined, have a healthy day. Okay, you know what? I'll do that by not buying your stupid foodiness shit. How about that? I mean, how stupid do you think we are? Don't answer that. Now, I mentioned that they also do a mac and cheese flavored puff too. Now, how would I love to be a fly on that flavor chemist's lab wall as they discuss with the Snickety client how to create a more grilled cheese flavor versus a more mac and cheese flavored corn puff. Wouldn't you love to hear that conversation? And speaking of mac and cheese, which I think will probably be another show, why do we still allow Kraft to sell their box macaroni and cheese here in the U.S. that's colored with a food dye that's been banned in Europe and the UK? Do America's parents realize this? Do they not care? Do they really think that what's inside that box is food with illegal, banned in other countries, yellow dye? I don't know. But that's another episode. Because I need to go now because I'm hungry and it's almost time to eat. And there's a hunk of cheddar and a loaf of bread waiting for me at home. But maybe since it's such a nice day, I'll stay here at Roberta's today and have myself a handmade artisanal pizza made with good cheese and good crust. Because there's a couple of really hot, giant Swedish guys sitting out there with a bottle of grappa just kind of looking at me in here. So I got to go. So remember, as I always say, if you don't want to eat, grilled cheesy shit or mac and cheesy shit or corn puff shit or any other kind of shit. Keep listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network, here with me, Erica Weitz. Thanks to Jack Inslee, who's back in the studio for good now, and to Ben Kaplan for my theme music, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.